News 101.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars
and Knowles.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I've got a simple question to start you off with. If somebody dies because of overheating, so I'm talking about somebody who's out in the hot summertime temperatures, and it is too hot, and even though she's driving around in her car, and she's 65 years old, and she's got the windows down, so clearly she had no air conditioning, and sadly, she realizes that she's about to lose consciousness, so she pulls off to the side of the road just to take a break and see if she can regain her, you know, composure, and she passes out. And then she never wakes up. And by the time a good Samaritan finds her and the paramedics are called, she is beyond all medical help and they cannot revive her. That is truly a tragedy. But you know what is a worse tragedy? Is when her family members decide that they're going to win the lawsuit lottery. They are going to sue somebody because mom died of overheating on one of the hottest days of the year. This happened about 4 years ago in the middle of summertime where, if you haven't been paying attention, it gets hot in the summertime. That day happened to be an especially hot day. It was 108 degrees. Now, are there ways to deal with that? Yes, there are. You can go to a shopping mall. You can go to most stores or coffee shops. You can sit down and drink a lot of water, and you can stay out of the sun. It is sad that this woman died, but now her family wants to be enriched because they have filed a lawsuit, not just against one oil company, but all the oil companies. And if it occurs you to say, well, Lars, why are the oil companies to blame? And that's where you get the Greta Thunberg kind of response. And that is, well, oil companies are to blame. They made all that darn gasoline. The gasoline that was burning in this woman's automobile as she was driving down the road. In other words, she was a user of gasoline, which she purchased from companies. But her family is arguing, well, they should have warned us all that they were going to wreck Earth's environment. And only if you believe that nonsense would you believe this kind of lawsuit. I'll get into some of the details of it. But first, welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Glad to have you on board. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every single day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you happen to be a naysayer, maybe you're one of those people who believes that all the oil companies are to blame and that anybody who has suffered because of the heat, let's say the water is insufficient for your farm, it's the oil company's fault. Let's say somebody dies of heat stroke, as this poor woman did, well, it's the oil company's fault. They owe us a lot of money. Now, it's crazy, but that's the gist of it. So if you're a naysayer and you actually believe that, I would love to talk to one person who actually believes that nonsense. And shame on her family. I understand that when anybody's family member dies, you want justice. When my mom died in a car wreck because of a drunk driver, I wanted justice too. But here's the thing. You can't just go out and sue the oil companies. They didn't wreck the environment. In fact, Earth's environment is not wrecked. It is actually, in many ways, getting better with higher levels of CO2, longer growing seasons. There are a lot of benefits. And in fact, as the scientist Bjorn Lomborg has pointed out, a lot more people die on planet Earth because of cold than because of heat. And in fact, heat can be very good in a lot of different ways. So I'm sure I'll get some climate change true believers. But welcome to the program. Oh, you can also vote in our X poll. And the question is, are you satisfied with the answers that we got about Jeffrey Epstein and whether or not he trafficked children to his friends for sex? Jeffrey Epstein is, of course, dead. I don't believe that he killed himself. I believe he was murdered. And I'll say that out loud. I also believe that he had a list, that he was already prosecuted once when he was still alive. He was prosecuted for pedophilia. and he got a very, very light sentence. He was on his way to be convicted a second time for some major league sexual crimes against children. He died first. Ghislaine Maxwell, who was involved in and convicted of trafficking children, young girls, for Jeffrey Epstein's sexual pleasure, she's sitting in prison right now. So who are the other people who are benefiting from Jeffrey Epstein's pedophilia and perversion? We don't know who they are. And the Trump administration promised you will get the information. And in fact, just a couple of months ago, the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, said, it's sitting here on my desk. We're getting ready to release it. And then they announced, strangely, over the 4th of July holiday weekend, in a release sent out on a Sunday night, that's the way politicians bury things. As much as I am a Trump supporter, I'm going to call this one out. We have not had adequate answers as to what happened with Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, his sick, perverted buddies, and their trafficking of children. So I'm going to answer that one, no. I'm not satisfied with the answers we got. You can find the X-Poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Vote in it any way you like, and if you feel inclined, call the show. But let me get back to this case, because this is truly a sad case. Julie Leon. It was June 4 years ago, June of 21. She's driving down the road. She's in Seattle, Washington. It's 108 degrees outside, the hottest day in that city that is on record. She had her windows rolled down, but she felt herself being overcome from the heat. She pulled to the side of the road, went onto a residential street, and she lost consciousness. She was never revived. Now, that is sad. But what I think is just absolutely criminal is when her family says, we want to get rich out of this. So they file a lawsuit. This one was filed in Seattle's King County Superior Court, and we'll see whether or not it actually produces a result. I'll cite the Center Square, which quotes a law professor from George Mason University, the Antonin Scalia Law School, who says these lawsuits are not being filed for the purpose of ever getting to trial. They're being filed for public relations effect and for leverage and for ways in which they can demonize or shame productive industries. By productive industries, he's referring to the oil business. He says, what happens with that case, whether or not it is settled out of court? I kind of hope that the oil companies collectively, the four that are being sued, that is the majors, ExxonMobil, Chevron, BP, and Shell, they're all named in the suit. I hope they have the guts to put the money together and fight this one. Take it all the way to trial and beat this thing in court. Number one, prove that the oil company's product caused the climate change that caused that one hot day on that one day of a year, 2021, in June of that year. Prove that the oil companies caused it. Then prove that the fact that it was hot that day, and many, many Americans suffered on a day that's that hot, but they all know the alternatives. You drink a lot of water, you stay in the shade, you stay out of the sun, and you manage to survive it. And in fact, as I said, in many ways, global warming is a good thing for planet Earth. And for all the people who say, well, we're having droughts because of global warming. Anybody talk to a meteorologist about what happens to the 75% of Earth's surface if the temperature goes up a bit? More water evaporates, more rain falls. And they say, no. We're told that every bad thing that happens in the water, in climate, whether it is floods, whether there is drought, it is all the fault of oil companies and climate change. And now, of course, you can add to that list Donald Trump as well. Glad to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And that's a good one to start with. 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Summer is the
He has small town politics with big town opinions. This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Well, the so-called leadership in Portland claim that they see improvements happening after the city's tragic decline over about the last decade. Mayor Keith Wilson apparently thinks his job as mayor isn't so much leader as it is cheerleader. How about a one-third of $1 billion in evidence that contradicts all the happy talk that you've been hearing from City Hall? 10 years ago, the Riot City's signature downtown U.S. Bank Core Tower, known as Big Pink, sold for $372 million to somebody who thought Portland's downtown would stay prosperous. Well, it turns out they were wrong. Yesterday, we learned that the owners who offered up Big Pink at a fire sale price of $70 million actually only got $45 million. That is a discount of one-third of $1 billion. Or think of it this way. 10 years ago, that 42-story bank building was worth very close to $9 million a floor. Today, it's worth just over $1 million per floor. Portland has allowed and now even invited riots for the last half dozen years in its downtown, leaving behind boarded up storefronts. In 2018, failure mayor Tear Gas Teddy Wheeler announced that he supported the Occupy ICE siege of federal immigration offices that went on for close to a month. The guy who promised to clean up his mess, Keith Wilson, promised something new and different. Well, guess what? It's not. More riots, less law enforcement, and for the people who live near the ICE offices, nightly noise and chaos, and even riots, too. ODOT is broke, TriMet's headed the same way, and the unemployment rate is 10% higher in Oregon than it is in the rest of America. Now, who are you going to believe? Lying politicians or your own eyes? Our question of the day brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. About yesterday's interview with the Deschutes County Sheriff about campers who encountered a crazy man in the woods outside of Bend who threatened to shoot those campers. Well, they called the police, and the sheriff's department said, yeah, we're not going. That guy is dangerous, so we're going to leave it to unarmed social workers. I kid you not, that's what the sheriff told me yesterday. Thank goodness he's leaving office at the end of August. Well, Terry Hillen wrote in, Lars, I just listened to the sheriff. I'm telling you right now, having managed litigation for years, the county would be better off firing that guy and the risk manager. Do you know how ludicrous and culpable the sheriff's department of the county are going to sound on the stand when the plaintiff's counsel says, so, you had multiple incidents of people having violent, threatening encounters with the subject, even going so far as to allege he would kill people, and you did nothing about it to protect the citizenry? My client would still be alive today if you had done your job. That is a multi-million dollar verdict just waiting to happen. Signed, Terry Hillen. Now, my favorite post on X today. Jan Ellings. In Seattle, protected classes under the law encompass race, color, religion, national origin, sex, sexual orientation, gender expression or identity, political ideology, age, marital status, and the presence of any disability. Additionally, the city of Seattle has recently added caste to the list of protected classes. So, the lady whose home was shot up for having MAGA signs in her yard that was in Ballard is protected. Listen to your show on KVI. Thanks and keep up the good work. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
You know, if I smoked marijuana and drank Pendleton whiskey all day long, I couldn't make up stuff half as crazy as the politicians are doing right now. Right now, City of Portland, which I just mentioned a moment ago, City of Seattle's not much better. But they've announced that they are probably going to defy Donald Trump's anti-DEI executive order. In case you didn't know it, DEI is diversity, equity, and inclusion. It is institutionalized racism and sexism. It is unconstitutional. It's illegal. And Donald Trump has said, if you keep up that DEI nonsense, you're not getting your federal money. Well, guess what? For the city of Portland, they figure $387 million may be lost if they stick with DEI. And at this point, it appears the city of Portland has decided to stick with institutionalized racism and give up a third of $1 billion. If that makes sense to anybody, I'd be glad to take the naysayer call. 866, hey, Lars. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Today's best email of the day, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway, or in my case, carport, from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. They did it for me. I've seen it with my own eyes. It's beautiful. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP-THAT. Joseph Duncan, U.S. Navy veteran, writes in, Lars, I was listening to your show as usual, and I heard on the radio about the highest cases of measles outbreak. I just shook my head, and the absolute dishonesty and lack of common sense by leftist media, libs, and Democrats. You have to have had the highest border crossings in decades from third world nations where health care is in the toilet because of the Democrats. Then they want to complain about a disease that anybody with half a brain would realize it's from the illegals who shouldn't be here. It is a national security issue and treason, in my view, but of course, nobody will be held accountable for it. Signed, Joseph Duncan, U.S. Navy, retired. Thank you very much, Joseph. To your calls on this Conspiracy Theory Thursday at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Mello, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah, I was at a Clark County meeting up on 6th floor in Vancouver, Washington. Mm-hmm. And I explained to them, you know, because I've been there numerous times, and I told them I have PTSD because of an illegal. He came and bashed my head open and left me disfigured and with PTSD. And I tell Clark County Council, please understand and have respect for my condition. Don't interrupt me. Let me speak. And sure enough, Mr. Will Fuentes, born in Mexico, who's now a Clark County counselor, decides to interrupt me and called me obsessive and this and that. Why? Well, excuse me, but you don't come to this country and as your first thing he did was say, let's get rid of the Pledge of Allegiance and prayer. So, no, I don't like the guy. And if he doesn't like my country's customs, get out. So he tried to say that I was being hateful when actually he was abusing a disabled person who is only disabled because of an illegal. And I have called the legislator of the Washington state begging them to deport automatically any felon not born in this country by bite. And look what they've done. But I did the same with Oregon, and they came up with, I think it's Bill 5883.
Okay, Mello, you're kind of getting all over the place. Bring it to a point, because I'm going to run up against a brick. So, what is it you'd like to see done?
Because he does not support our country, and he is abusing our people, and he is doing everything that Ann wants him to do. He's a little puppet for the city of Vancouver and wants to urbanize all Clark County. I mean, no more Yakult, no more Camas. Everything should be ruled under the mayor.
Unbelievable. Ann McInerney Ogle, and we've invited her on before. She's been on the program before. She's invited back. Mello, thank you very much, and better luck next time. Government is not doing the bidding of the people, and that's not how representative government is supposed to work. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland. Unwrapping the news so you don't have to. Back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It seems kind of ironic to me that in this day and age of social media, texting, emailing, and all that, that the more we get the ability to communicate, the more the government seems to try to hide from citizens what's actually going on inside the government that they pay for, the government that allegedly serves them. So when this kind of controversy pops up, and what I'm talking about is in the Dalles, in the North Wasco County School Board, there have been three attempts. This is from the Daily Fish Wrapper. Three times in the last 10 days, they have tried to meet in secret without much public notice. They have to give 24 hours notice for an executive session, and they've done it behind the back of the superintendent of schools for Wasco County School Board. Now, the guy who's at ground zero on all this is a long, long time friend, Al Wynn, fellow radio guy, owner of KODL in the Dalles, and a host of his own talk show. Hey, Al, welcome back to the program. It's been too long.
Hey, thanks for the invitation. large.
Now, I understand you know the straight skinny on what's going on here, because it sounds like there might be a conspiracy designed by four new members of this school board to oust the superintendent and hold executive sessions of the school board as with as little public notice as possible. Am I getting that right or wrong?
Totally wrong. Totally wrong.
Okay.
Totally wrong. It's unfounded, Lars.
So what's actually happening here? What is actually going on that the school board would want to meet an executive session and not have the superintendent present unless they're talking about the superintendent?
I think you hit the nail on the head. Yeah. What they tried to do, well, first of all, the community for some time has been upside down. I've talked about it on my talk show. For a year probably. And the community was sick and tired of it. Actually, they were sick and tired of being sick and tired. And the community elected four new school board members to change the course of direction for the district and make the district probably more accountable to taxpayers who pay the bill. So we had the election. And then four new school board members were elected, and therein lies the story, because the status quo is pretty unhappy about what's going on. They have not, they will be sworn in at the meeting, the next school board meeting. They tried to call a board meeting. Actually, in my opinion, the school district was the superintendent of the school district was totally not on board with a meeting. Lack of cooperation, in my opinion, is huge in this regard. So they scheduled a meeting, and then they tried to have that meeting, and they decided they needed to step back and look at it again. The board has not had any special – they're totally aware of a quorum, and they have not violated that law at all, Lars. And
okay, let's take a step back. What is it about how the school district is running that is making the community so unhappy that they would elect four brand-new board members with a different point of view? Because, you know, I've seen boards where they've elected a new slate of conservatives, and I'm happy about it. When they replace them with a bunch of liberals, I'm not happy. What's making the community so unhappy with the way this school district is operating?
Well, the community is unhappy at the dysfunction of the school district, Lars. I mean, it's like the last 4 years have been very difficult, you know, and the community hasn't felt that they were being served well by the administration of the school district, so they wanted to change it. And people are uncomfortable. Change is the biggest thing in life to deal with, but change occurs when someone discovers the next step, and this community discovered the next step, and that was to elect a new school board.
And then from that, to replace the current school superintendent, which, depending on what it is she's doing that's making the community unhappy, I might be 100% behind. But then why not say, we're going to have an executive session. If you want to sit in, we're going to be talking about you. Come on down.
She has not been excluded from the executive session.
Well, so the Oregonian, no surprise, got it completely wrong when they said there were three attempts to call executive session meetings. Those are out of the view of the public, but reporters can go and listen to what goes on, but they're not allowed to report on it as long as they stay within either personnel matters or land purchase matters. Do you think they probably wanted to talk about Carolyn Bernal and whether or not she should continue as the superintendent, right?
Well, I think that that's probably on the list. They talked about personnel and executive committee, an executive session. But, you know, the Oregonian got it totally wrong.
Okay.
It's totally flawed, period. There's not an ounce of truth in any of it, except they did try to have a couple of meetings, and they backed off because they want to do what needs to be done correctly. They have not met privately. There hasn't been a quorum. They haven't even been sworn into office That won't happen until the next meeting, although they're on the board effective July 1.
July 1. I was going to say, if they haven't been sworn in, they couldn't call a meeting anyway, could they?
That's exactly right, Lars.
Did they know that?
Did who know it?
The board members who, and is it true that they tried to call board meetings, but you have to give 24 hours notice, and they tried three times and failed to give the sufficient notice each time? Is that all? Is that also wrong from the Fisher Act?
No, I think that's partially wrong, Lars. The school district has not cooperated, in my opinion, for the public notice. The website isn't accessible. They've run into barriers at the administration level. The get-go and all of this happening now, and what my opinion, what the Oregonian is doing is putting up a one-sided, flawed, not factual kind of thing. That's what's really going on. There's a lot of dysfunction in our school district, and as I said, for some time, I think the California experiment is over.
Good.
It's over, period, and I've said that for 6 months. I had the superintendent on my talk show, and after I got thumped about four times, a couple of times with the no-show or not convenient, I took her off the list and said, you know, you can't show up. You don't think it's important to communicate with the community. I can't help you.
And that's what we do as well, Al. We have people who do no shows, and they just end up falling off our list. She's not been a good superintendent, in your view?
Absolutely. That's my opinion. You know, and if I was in charge, I'd do something. I purposely have stayed out of executive sessions, Lars,
I used to go to them, and can I tell you why? A lot of people don't realize, under Oregon's public meetings law, you can have an executive session to talk about employee discipline. That's a good thing to do behind closed doors. But then when you have to take the action, you have to go out into public and vote and say, we're going to fire so-and-so, or we're going to hire so-and-so. You can also do it on land purchases, because you don't want to tell the guy you're going to buy the land from what your maximum bid would be. So you can do that behind closed doors. But I've found public bodies wander outside the rules on executive session all the time. They get behind closed doors, and they're only supposed to be talking about those two things, and then they want to talk about other things behind closed doors where there is a quorum present. If a reporter is there, and I've done this, I've said, hey, you're outside of the executive session rules, and if you talk about this, I'm going to report on it. It's a good double check on the people in public office who want to abuse executive session. Al, I appreciate you taking the time to set this straight. Not a big surprise that the fish wrapper got it wrong. Back in a moment, we'll get to your phone calls and emails. And guess what? Judicial Watch has a lawsuit going against the state of Oregon to clean up its voter rolls. We'll talk about that and the latest development coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network.
Literally have Lars with you all day, every day. Podcasts at Spotify, Apple, SoundCloud, and live right now. What a time to be alive. Here's Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. This segment is brought to you by 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. Now, our X poll for today. Are you satisfied with the answers we got about whether Jeffrey Epstein trafficked children for sex to some of his friends? I would answer no. I'm not satisfied. And apparently there are at least a few people in the White House, senior Trump aides, who are not happy with the way that this has been handled. When Donald Trump and then his Attorney General Pam Bondi promise this information will be made public, the so-called Epstein client list. Now, what's that all about? Well, you got Jeffrey Epstein, who's a convicted pedophile, was on his way to a trial in which I am confident he would have been convicted of more pedophilia, sex with children, really despicable acts, except he died in federal custody in Manhattan. Now, Did he die because of suicide or murder? I tend to think it was murder. I don't think there's any indication he would have committed suicide or did commit suicide. But that is the or was the official story of folks like Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, and others. And Donald Trump and others in his administration said Cash Patel, the head of the FBI, had come out and said, we have the information. We will be making it public. And then over a holiday weekend, late on a Sunday night, they released the word that, nope, Jeffrey Epstein killed himself, and there is no Epstein client list. Well, now there's a new interesting twist to this. Alan Dershowitz, the professor emeritus from Harvard, he is a Democrat, he is a liberal, but I think at least on the law, I've usually found him to be accurate on the law. He claims that when he was in the process of defending himself, because Dershowitz was accused, you were one of those people who benefited from this bizarre pedophilia and trafficking of children. Well, Dershowitz says he has seen the Epstein client list. The Trump DOJ claims no such list exists. Except that I don't trust the government generally about this, and I don't think Donald Trump trusts the deep state. You know that the FBI has lied to us about things. The CIA has lied to us about things. Various people in various presidential administrations have lied to us. And I know that the Trump haters out there will be saying to themselves, oh, yeah, and Trump's lying, too. Well, I want to know, did Jeffrey Epstein maintain this huge network of obtaining children for sex using Ghislaine Maxwell as his trafficker? And maintain no records whatsoever that ever came into the possession of the federal government? Or were those records in the hands of the federal government and they were destroyed? Except that's not what the Trump administration is saying. They're saying there is no list. And I want to know whether or not there is one. Let me go to Rob in Seattle. Hey, Rob, thanks for listening on KVI. But this one makes me really, really mad and frankly disappointed in the Trump administration writ large.
He would have been where Maxwell is right now had he not been murdered in prison. And a couple of nights ago, I saw again where back in 2015, Trump had, in not so many words, had said Epstein was a pedophile. That information is out there. So I forgot about that. That was almost 10 years ago.
Rob, we know that because he was convicted. He wasn't convicted of everything he did because in Florida, I've followed this case for years. In Florida, he was obtaining many, many children, young girls, teenage girls, and using them for his sexual perversions. And he ends up with one conviction for, obtaining sex from a minor. And he got relatively minor punishment for it, house arrest. It was amazing how light it was. And there are theories that he was a spy or that he worked for the Mossad or he worked for the CIA. Who knows? But you're right. We know he's a pedophile for a fact, or was a pedophile. He's dead now. Right. And I don't believe that he killed himself.
I said it months and months ago when it all, over a year ago, I said it on X and other platforms. Nothing is going to become of it. They're going to chat it up. You're going to have Cash. You're going to have Bondi. And the other are going to get in there and they're going to say, they're going to do all this. They're going to do all that. I disagreed way back when. Another thing, the FBI doesn't have the files. The Department of Justice has those files. If they wanted to release them, they could. But there's a lot of incriminating information out there.
Well, except Rob, hold on. Their official story is the files contain no client list. That's their official story.
Right.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But what I'm saying is if anybody was going to break this loose, it was not going to be Joe Biden. It was not going to be Kamala Harris. It wasn't going to be Barack Obama. No. It was going to be Donald Trump. If we're now finding out that Trump and his handpicked team can't break this information loose, and when you say incriminate, I understand. I mean, I've told people that say I had the list. I don't. But if I had the list, if I went out and read on the air, these people are all pedophiles who obtain sex from children, I'd get sued blue and tattooed. I mean, it would because you'd have what you need is for federal prosecutors to look at it and say these are unindicted co-conspirators of Jeffrey Epstein. There has to be some official action. Otherwise, you're going to have a real problem, because accusing somebody of pedophile acts, if you don't have the proof, you will end up in court for the rest of your life. And I appreciate the call. Thanks for listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are trying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on what we call Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Now, I want to offer you what I would consider to be prima facie proof that I'm a patient guy. I've been talking about birthright citizenship on this program for just about 28 years. And I've always hoped that this issue would get resolved. And for a long time, I'd not lost hope. I was still talking about it, but I realized how difficult it was going to be. And now it seems it is within reach to finally resolve this issue and prove that children born to people who are not legally in this country are not American citizens. That's not what the 14th Amendment says. It's not what it was ever intended to say. Except now we've got federal judges running around issuing one nationwide injunction after another, even after the U.S. Supreme Court slapped them down. So at that point, a non-lawyer like me has to turn on a full-blown lawyer like Zach Smith, who's at the Heritage Foundation, co-author with Cully Stimson, the great Cully Stimson, of Rogue Prosecutors, How Radical Soros Lawyers Are Destroying America's Communities. Zach, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Lars.
Did this federal judge, the one who's issued the latest one, saying, okay, nationwide, I'm blocking your birthright citizenship rule, and now we've got a class action lawsuit. Are these folks not getting the memo from John Roberts and the other eight?
Well, if they got the memo, they chose to ignore it, which is unfortunate and a bad thing for us as a country. It's a bad thing for the rule of law, and will ultimately be a bad thing for the federal judiciary, because these types of actions undermine the respect for the rule of law, the respect for the judiciary that we as American citizens have. But look, Lars, you mentioned class actions.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about the ban on nationwide injunctions that the Supreme Court handed down. One of the loopholes they left in place potentially to be exploited was they said many of these cases might be able to be brought as class actions. In fact, Justice Alito saw the danger in leaving this loophole. He wrote separately to urge federal judges to stringently apply the class action standards as they're supposed to do. But this decision today, I think, shows that Justice Alito's fears were well-founded, and ultimately the justices may have to weigh in again on this very issue.
Okay, Zach, one of the things I got to know, because I always emphasize I'm not a lawyer. I don't even try to play one on the radio. But I understand that if Zach Smith takes his car one day and knocks my mailbox down, I can say, Zach, you're going to pay for that. And if he says no, I can sue him and say, you got to pay for my mailbox. But if I just think your crazy driving is going to knock my mailbox down someday, I can't sue you for what happens someday. As I understand it, this class action lawsuit is being brought on behalf of a woman who is pregnant but has not given birth to what her lawyers claim is an American citizen, but the 14th Amendment says is not. Can you bring a class action with your plaintiff, your chosen plaintiff, as somebody who hasn't had the baby yet?
Well, it's a great question. So initially, this suit that was brought by the ACLU, they're asking to certify a class containing both the parents and the children. Now, the judge in this case, he did decline to include the parents in that class action, recognizing many may have different immigration statuses, they may be too dissimilar. And he said ordinarily the court would ask for more information. They would conduct what's known as discovery to try to find out if, in fact, a class could be certified. But look, again, Lars, this is the thing Justice Alito was worried about, and I'll read your quote. He said, quote, lax enforcement of the requirements for class certification would create a potentially significant loophole for today's decision, that birthright citizenship case, a decision. He said this mechanism could lead to potential abuses and could ultimately undermine the court's decision that it came out with just last week. So, look, I think federal judges need to strictly apply the class certification rules. And if they don't, then the Court of Appeals should step in. And if the Court of Appeals don't step in, then the U.S. Supreme Court should step in again and say, no, we really meant what we said just a few weeks ago.
Okay, so this Judge LaPlante of New Hampshire. So he's a federal judge at the lowest level. I guess magistrates are below them, but they're one of the lowest levels of the federal courts. He said, I'll certify a lawsuit as a class action, and I'm going to block Donald Trump's executive order that ends birthright citizenship, that I guess effectively just says to the State Department, don't issue, you know, a passport or a birth certificate certifying a baby as an American citizen. If they're born to somebody who's not within the jurisdiction of the United States, as the 14th Amendment says. So what does this do from a practical standpoint? Does it actually block the president from enforcing federal immigration law, which last time I checked the Constitution, he has a constitutional right to enforce immigration law, doesn't he?
Well, I would argue he doesn't just have a right, Lars. He has a duty to enforce federal immigration law, which is unfortunately what Joe Biden didn't do for 4 years of his administration. But look, in terms of the practical effect of this decision, it essentially freezes the status quo for now. The judge stayed or basically said his decision wouldn't take effect for 7 days while the government appeals. And the Supreme Court's decision itself had been stayed for some period of time. They gave a period of time where it wouldn't be enforced. So all this does, it kind of keeps the status quo in place. But I think it's important to understand, Lars, if you listen to many on the left, if you listen to some of this judge's statements, they say that the law is clear on this point, that the binding Supreme Court precedent saying the 14th Amendment requires birthright citizenship. That's just not true. If you read the language of the 14th Amendment, it uses a very technical term. It says anyone born or naturalized and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, meaning having a political allegiance to the United States. People we think of as either parents were citizens, their parents were long-term residents of the United States, not illegal aliens, not people here on tourist visas. The 14th Amendment was never intended to apply to those categories of individuals. And I think, in fact, if you read some of the prior case law from the 1890s in particular, that is essentially what the Supreme Court said, is that those having an allegiance to the United States, intending to become part of our political community, those are the individuals that the 14th Amendment is designed to.
Okay,
to
so let me ask you, Zach, could we end up with a situation where the executive order was supposed to go into effect, was it 30 days after he signed it or 60 days after he signed,
right,
you know, some
right
period of time. So we could literally, we have babies being born in the United States right now whose parents are going to be handed a birth certificate identifying them as born in the United States and theoretically eligible to be considered citizens, that at some point when the courts finally get done with this in months or years, that those we may have to modify those records and say you had citizenship for a few months, but now you don't?
Well, look, I think that's a very real question, a very real concern of many people. That's why the president put a period of time in place where his order was going to be stayed and not take effect. So, look, I think everyone recognizes this issue needs to be resolved very expeditiously. Unfortunately, the way many of these federal district court judges are going about it, the way they are essentially issuing these very broad injunctions, that is only slowing down the effort to get to the underlying merits, resolve the underlying merits of these claims while the courts deal with all of these very unique and very, to put it nicely, odd procedural mechanisms judges are using.
At the end of the day, when this arrives with the nine in the Supreme Court, they're going to decide that there is no birthright citizenship for people not subject to the jurisdiction, aren't they?
Well, I certainly think that is the better reading of the 14th Amendment. It's hard to anticipate where some of the justices stand on.
That's a good point. Hey, Zach, I'm sorry. We came up against the break. That's Zach Smith from Heritage. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Before you are, weeding out the right from the wrong.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I would imagine that you're going to be hearing a lot about Medicaid, and we've talked about it on this program as well. Again, Medicaid, health insurance for the poor, paid for by taxpayers. Medicare is something different. So you're going to be hearing, and here's what you have been hearing, and it's one of the things that I really want to straighten out for you, because I get more emails on this than just about anything. The fact is, the Trump administration is going to cut millions of people from Medicaid. And I'm sick and tired of the Republicans denying that. They're going to cut people off. And what you should do is, when your liberal friends to you say to you, well, Donald Trump is cutting millions of people from Medicaid, you smile at them and you say, you're damn right he is, and they deserve to be cut. Now, when your liberal friends pick themselves up off the floor and say, what do you mean you want to cut people off? Yeah, there are three major categories, the three biggest numbers of Medicaid recipients who are going to be cut off are, number one, illegal aliens who have no right under federal law to get it at all. Number two, deadbeats. And by deadbeats, I'm talking about working age adults, not children, not the old, and working age and childless. So in other words, a young man or woman, or even a couple who have no children, they are of working age, so they're not children anymore, and they're not elderly, and they are not disabled. If they do not have a job, they lose their Medicaid. And then the third category are doctors, nurses, hospitals, and clinics who mutilate children in the name of transgender affirmation. In other words, they do castrations of teenage boys, they cut the breasts of teenage girls, and you say, okay, which one of those three groups do you want to preserve on Medicaid? Now, I've told you that before, but I wanted to arm you up with that. So when people say, he's cutting people off Medicaid, yeah, name those three groups. Illegals, deadbeats, and Mengelas is what I want to call them, Dr. Mengelas. But there are some other details to this that I find absolutely fascinating, and here's why. Because when the Democrats and the major news media, the cartel media, they run around and say, why, millions of people will be cut off Medicaid. Yeah. Do you know who also did that? Did the very same damn thing. That would be the horny hick from Arkansas, Bill Clinton, back in 1996, 30 years ago, almost 30 years ago. And they called it welfare reform. And what did that include? You didn't get welfare or Medicaid for illegal aliens. There were work requirements. There was even a lifetime cap on the amount of benefits you could get. Now, when that was done in 1996, the mainstream cartel media thought that was the best. Well, Bill Clinton, he's reforming Medicare, or he's reforming welfare along with Medicare. So what did the Democrats do? They didn't object at all. Now, some people are believing what they're hearing about Medicaid and food stamps, that literally thousands of people in America will die. When you hear that, call it out for what it is, bull stuff. Okay? It simply is not true. But there are some other details you ought to know about. Of the $1 trillion over the next 10 years, $1 trillion in cuts to Medicaid, let me give you one big piece of it. $167 billion, about 17% of the amount that's being cut over 10 years. That comes from where? Well, back when Joe Biden was president, or somebody was using his auto pen to pretend to be Joe Biden, in 2023, 2 years ago, he wanted to put some new rules in place to make it easier for people who could not get signed up for Medicaid to get signed up for Medicaid. Now, those rules were never put in place. They were written by Joe Biden's White House 2 years ago, but they never were put in place. So it never got easier for those denied groups to get into Medicaid. Well, those rules are now going to be pushed back another 10 years by the Trump administration. I hope they erase the rules altogether. But think about this. They're calling it a cut when rules that would have allowed $167 billion to go to people who aren't qualified for Medicaid, and Joe Biden wrote those rules, but he never actually put them in place. When they cut that and push them back for another 10 years, the Democrats are saying, well, that's a cut. In other words, money that was going to be spent on people but never was spent on people is now not going to be spent again for 10 years, and they're calling that a cut. If you consider that a cut, I guess you could say, well, okay, that's a cut. $191 billion. And you know where this one's coming from? It is coming from something that I think is fairly easy to understand, although it is complex. But I want to give you this metaphor. You go out and you have an accident in your car, and it's minor, you don't get hurt. You take your car into the shop, and they say, well, this is going to cost about $5,000 to repair. And you say, okay. But the repairman is maybe a felonious type, and he says to you, I'll tell you what, I'm going to submit a claim for $7,000. And you say, but the damage is only $5,000. And he says, yeah, but here's the best part. When I get that extra $2,000, I'll keep $500 of it, and you keep $1,500 of it and put it in your pocket. Now, that would be called, in common terms, insurance fraud. And it would be insurance fraud. You and the mechanic or the auto body shop guy could actually go to prison for committing that kind of insurance fraud. That is exactly what some of the liberal states in America are doing. What they've done is gone to the hospitals and said, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to slap a big tax on you, and it's going to cost you more. You're going to have to pay a bunch of money to the state. The hospitals say, well, hold on. How's that a good deal? They say, because then you submit a bill to the federal government that is bigger than your actual bill would have been, because you'll say, we have to include these state taxes, and we promise all the taxes we collect, we're going to give it right back to you for Medicaid for people like illegal aliens who are not qualified. The states can't pay for Medicaid for illegal aliens, but if they tax the hospital submits a bigger than realistic bill, and they get more money from the feds. California, Oregon, Washington, and other liberal states, about 20 of them, have been doing this for the last decade or so. And it's a sleazy deal, no different than the kind of insurance fraud I just explained to you. But there is a third group, and that third group, I'm going to give you a number for it. Out of the $1 trillion that all the liberals are running around like their hair's on fire saying, Donald Trump is going to cut $1 trillion over the next 10 years for Medicaid. You just say to them, yes, he is. And one third of that amount, the biggest single amount of cut, is going to be $326 billion. One third of the entire amount. Now, what is that? Where does that cut come from? Deadbeats. I mean, that's the shorthand. Just tell your friend, they're cutting deadbeats. Well, what do you mean? Well, they're going to put work requirements in place. And if you don't work a job at least 20 hours a week, half time, in other words, you could probably knock off 20 hours a week by working Saturday and Sunday and have the rest of the day, the week off to sit and watch TV or play video games. Well, do the work requirements cover everybody? No, they don't. Do you know who they don't cover? They don't cover children. They don't cover pregnant women. They don't cover the disabled. They don't cover the elderly. They don't cover caretakers. They don't cover parents of young children. The only people that the work requirements apply to are working age, childless, work capable people. And that will cut $326 billion. And then you look your liberal friends in the face and you say, do you want to pay for Medicaid health insurance for deadbeats who won't work a job, who have no children, they're not disabled, they're not children, they're not elderly, and they have no children of their own? Do you want them at least to work a part-time job? That's what federal law says. And if your liberal friends are so crazy liberal that they say, yeah, we should buy free health insurance for the guy or gal who wants to sit on his couch and do nothing and play video games, we should pay for that. You know, I might suggest that you walk the other way. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. On demand, wherever and whenever you want it. Get the podcasts all day, every day at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I'm sure the liberals will have a field day with this one. The Trump Department of Education today has revoked a Clinton-era rule that allowed illegal aliens to access taxpayer money for technical and career schools. So I guess no longer doing the jobs that Americans won't do. To talk about this, who knows it well, is Jaron Croson, who is a reporter with the Daily Caller. Jaron, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So, Jaron, tell me this. What's the result of this, and why were we paying for tuition at technical and career schools for illegal aliens to begin with?
Well, I think that's the major question we don't quite have an answer to. And I don't know about you, but I was shocked to even hear this. I think many of us didn't even realize that this was happening in the first place.
No, I didn't. And I guess it flies against all this, you know, this meme that has existed, I would say, probably longer than you've been alive, but about 30 or 40 years, where, oh, yeah, illegals, don't worry about them. There may be 30 million of them, but they're all out picking crops or doing other kinds of scut work that Americans refuse to do. Except if they're going to technical and career schools, it means they may be driving a truck and making 100 grand a year. Or they may be welding or doing HVAC or plumbing or electrical or 100 other jobs that you need that technical training for, and American taxpayers are paying the bill?
Right, and that's truly baffling because Congress actually established the year before the Clinton administration, you know, set this groundwork, is that taxpayer funds cannot go towards welfare and public benefits, and yet the Department of Education under the Clinton administration said that somehow that rule doesn't apply to them. And they've essentially been doing this under the noses of Americans for like 30 years.
Any idea how much money we've been spending on all this?
That honestly is a great question. I would love to find out. I mean, like I said, many of us are kind of just now becoming aware that this was even a problem. So I think we're really going to start seeing these numbers come out soon.
Boy, you really know when the government has gotten so big that it has, what, millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on programs that most people don't even realize exist unless you happen to be one of the beneficiaries, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, that really goes to show how much, you know, we're how much in national debt now, and we're somehow, you know, spending more and more every year, and we're somehow discovering all these ways that we could be cutting funding, going to these programs we don't even know exist, going towards non-American citizens. Like, I don't even understand how this has been happening.
Okay, so does this go into effect immediately, meaning that there are trade schools out there that perhaps this fall were anticipating they were going to get a bunch of students, and now those students are being told, no, you're not getting the money anymore. If you want to pay for trade school, pay for it out of your own pocket?
Well, the Department of Education said that they were going to begin enforcing the rule on August 9th. So technical schools kind of have a little bit of wiggle room to figure all of that out.
Okay, so if they begin enforcing on August 9th, then typically people think of school, whether it's college or trade school, as running, that most of them will offer classes year-round, but an awful lot of students end up going to school September through June. So it sounds like it's going to hit some of the kids, some of the young people who are going to school this fall.
Well, that is to be determined. The tricky thing here is that unlike with, you know, federal student loans, which do go to individual students, with these career and technical programs, the money usually goes directly to these schools and to the organizations putting on the program. So I think the next obstacle the administration is going to have is having to have these programs actually expose how many of their students are illegal immigrants and actually make sure they're checking the citizenship status of their students.
Well, and I would guess that if that's the way they're going to do it, they're going to put it on the schools and say, you need to make sure these students are actually American, either illegally in the country or American citizens. Then if they find out they're not, it sounds like the school is on the hook for the bill. They won't get reimbursed by the federal government, right?
That is exactly right. And as we've seen recently, the Trump administration is very willing to actually stand true to that and revoke funds from non-compliant schools.
Now, were we expecting this move by the Ed Department?
I definitely wasn't. Like I said, I wasn't even aware this was something that was happening. But, I mean, the administration has been very clear in recent months about, you know, trying to make sure that the focus, especially with, you know, how badly American students are doing in education right now, making sure that all of our resources really are going towards Americans.
Well, and there's another change as well, and this involves some substantial cash, about $7 billion, and it had to do with ESL. You wrote about that in your story. Tell my audience, please.
Yeah, exactly. So on June 30th, the administration announced that it was revoking nearly $7 billion in federal grants that we're going towards teaching these like adult education programs, mostly geared towards teaching English as a second language, which often also went towards illegal immigrants. So the administration put its foot down and said, we're going to stop giving these funds. We're going to review them because we think that they're pushing an agenda we don't agree with, and it's pushing an agenda that, frankly, violates the law.
Look, I can understand, Jaron, if you, I'm talking to Jaron Krausen, who's with the Daily Caller, but if you came to an, if I was going to move to another country, I never planned to do that, but if I was going to go to Germany, I would learn German, and I would hope I wouldn't have to learn too much of it on the ground. I'd do it in advance. If you're coming to the United States and you have no English skills, how in the world do you hope to earn a living? Unless, of course, you're doing one of those jobs where you don't have to talk to anybody, which there aren't too many of.
Right, exactly. And somehow that's become an unpopular opinion today, that you somehow shouldn't have to learn the language of the country you're living in.
And that we're going to pay billions of dollars? Does it really cost that much to teach English as a second language to people who've come into the country illegally?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, with the amount of kind of federal waste we've been discovering, I mean, who knows where all this money is really going.
Okay, so, and how long is it going to take for some liberal group to go out and take this one to court and try to challenge it and find a federal judge to knock it down nationwide?
I give it until tomorrow.
Until tomorrow. Yeah, and only tomorrow because tomorrow's a work day, so they can still go to court. Jaron, thanks very much. Are you working on any other big ones? Because this administration, and I think 2025, is wall-to-wall with good issues to take on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I think the thing to be watching right now is obviously the Trump administration has been having his battle with all these Ivy League universities. So keeping an eye on what's coming out of Harvard and Columbia and all these other schools, seeing if they're going to keep their accreditation and their federal funding.
Yeah, and how many other students are going to end up suing the administration as Mahmoud Khalil, I guess, filed a $20 million lawsuit against the federal government. All this stuff's being battled out in court, and the Congress is taking more days off than it usually does most years. Jaron, thank you very much. That's Jaron Krausen, who is a reporter with the Daily Caller. Jaron, thanks. I appreciate the time. Glad to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And how's that for a conspiracy theory? If your son or daughter has come to you recently and said, hey, Dad, I'd like to go to school. And Dad says, well, we just don't have the money. Unless you've got it, I don't know how you're going to get it. And then you find out that literally billions of dollars is being spent to teach illegal aliens how to speak English. And billions of dollars is being spent to teach illegal aliens in trade schools, schools that your kids can't even afford to go to. If you're one of those parents, I certainly hope you remember that at election time next year, because it's the Congress that ought to be writing the rules on this. The Trump administration is doing all the heavy lifting right now. Glad to be with you. Glad to take those calls at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. The winner.
To all the wokey snowflakes, yes, you are probably going to be offended. This is the Lars Larsen Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larsen Show. I don't think there is a government agency anywhere here in the Pacific Northwest that is not crying and moaning about how short of cash they are. And yet, can you imagine this? A major city in Oregon, the city of Portland, is talking about passing on $387 million in federal grants. Now, frankly, I think cities ought to pay their own bills. I think we ought to pay a lot less in federal taxes. And I think that states and local governments should be in charge where they are closest to their constituents. In other words, if the federal government is spending money and is spending it through a Congress that has 535 members and they move like molasses and much of the time they don't actually do their jobs, is that likely to be as responsive as, say, if you live in Seattle or Portland or Spokane or Boise, if you say to your local government, hey, mayor, hey, governor, we need to get this done. you get much more responsive government at the local level than you do at the federal level, where somebody in a city, let's say Boise, says, why, we need to have better police radios. Okay, we'll have our congressman attempt to attach that to the next budget bill. That'll be coming up in 6 months. Then they'll spend a few months discussing it. Then they'll vote on it, and maybe your radios will be in that, maybe they won't. And if they are in it, it'll come to you at the beginning of the next federal fiscal year, which is October 1. Does that sound like responsive government to you? And yet, as long as we're stuck in this system where hundreds of billions of dollars are sent back to Washington, D.C., the federal government carves off its share and then doles out money to the cities. As long as we're in that, the city of Portland is due to receive $387 million in federal grants, except President Trump, I think, has wisely said, if you're going to stick to diversity, equity, and inclusion, you're not going to get the cash. Now, here's the question for citizens in the Northwest. And this, the same applies in different, at different scale in Portland, in Seattle, in Spokane, in the Tri-Cities, in Eugene and Medford, and everywhere else in the region. Would you want your city to say, we are going to stick with our DEI, even if it costs us $387 billion that we could use to pay for services to local residents? Remember, this is one of those games where if the folks at City Hall, in this case, City of Portland, as an example, say, we're going to stick with DEI. We want to be able to hire people based not on their competence, but based on their skin color or their ethnicity or their sexual preference or their pronoun identification. And we're going to stick to that DEI, even if it costs us $387 million, more than a third of a billion dollars. If they do that, this is one of those situations where if they pass on the money, then certain city services are not going to be delivered. How do you feel about that? Not just how do you feel about that, how do you want your leadership to make that decision? Now, I would ditch DEI in a heartbeat. I've never thought it was a good idea. In fact, I've always held to the position that DEI is simply institutionalized racism and sexism. For example, how do you achieve a DEI result in government? What you do is you say, instead of hiring the best candidate for every single job, whether it's plowing snow, you know, on Snoqualmie Pass, whether it's repairing streets in downtown Eugene, we're going to hire people so that we get the right mix of men and women, black, white, and brown. We're going to get the right mix of he, she, and other pronouns like they. We're going to get the right mix of this, that, and the other thing, and that is going to be the criteria on which people are hired to do jobs. If they stick to DEI, it's not only a terrible way to hire people, but it's actively discriminatory. It means that if 10 fully qualified women show up to get a job, but all of them are white, and the agency says, but we subscribe to DEI because we have to do DEI, and even if it costs us a lot of money, then what does that agency do? They say, we've got 10 qualified women here to take the job, but they're all white. We need to get a certain percentage of people of color. We need to get a certain percentage of people who identify as neither he nor she because they can't figure out if they're a man or a woman. They are a they. They identify as they. And we're going to have to hire one of those people. And if they were asked, under DEI, does that mean you will hire somebody who is less qualified simply because they don't identify as a man or a woman? The answer under DEI is yes. Yes, we are going to hire that person. We have to have a certain percentage of our workforce that represents diversity. And in that case, it has to be diversity of skin, diversity of sexuality, diversity of pronoun, diversity of everything else. Now, does that make sense to you? Does that deliver good city services? I'll remind you, there is a DEI fire chief in Austin, Texas right now. I don't think he's been fired yet. I think he is going to get fired. And what happened when those terrible floods hit on the 4th of July last Friday? That fire chief decided to delay by several days the response from his fire department, which had people specifically trained in swift water rescue. His own fire union has come out and basically said, this guy is no good. He was a DEI hire. Now, if you get those kinds of decisions, literally, it means that sometimes people are going to die. in the case of Texas, sometimes children are going to die because you decided to be politically correct instead of actually hiring the best person for the job. City of Portland is saying right now, so far they have not backed off. They will stick with DEI, even if it costs the city more than a third of $1 billion in money that you paid out of your pockets to the federal government. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.com. Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network. Lars. And Lars. Now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Vote in our X poll. You can find the daily poll question at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. In the interest of full disclosure, I should tell you that I've many times in my life been a renter of an apartment or a house where I live for a time. So I've been a renter. I've also been a landlord for a period of time, about 10 years, but that was just a sidelight to what I do, and I decided my time was better spent in front of a microphone. But for the life of me, I don't understand how the Seattle City Council can tell landlords, and I know there are many people out there who hate landlords, but landlords provide, I don't. They provide an essential service. They're subject to market forces that set the prices. And now the Seattle City Council has said you are not allowed to use certain algorithms to figure out how much to charge for rent. On that note, let's go to Mark Harmsworth, who is the director of the Small Business Center at Washington Policy. He's also running to take a seat in the 44th District House of Representatives, position one in Washington State. Hey, Mark, good luck on the run for election. Is it legal, is it constitutional for the city of Seattle to tell landlords they can't use an electronic tool to help them set the rents?
Well, hi, Lars. Thanks for having me on today. And on the 44th District, I'm not actually running this year. I was in the 44th.
Oh.
I just want to call that out so I didn't get myself in trouble
running
with another,
again. I thought
no,
you were
with
running
another agency down there. But
okay.
No. But on the city council side of things here, yeah, the Seattle City Council has decided in their ultimate wisdom here that they want to control rents. They're doing this, obviously, through the rent control legislation that was passed in the legislature this year. And now what they're doing is looking at other things. Think of it like the Zillow app or some of the other tools that you would use, as you mentioned, Lars, as a renter, to figure out how much you would be paying for rent or even a mortgage if you bought a house. And these are tools that go out and they collect publicly traded information that is then, you know, pulled together and aggregated into a tool that makes it easy for you to see how much things are going to cost. Well, there's a tool called RealPage that property owners use to look at what a fair market value rent would be for their property. And this particular tool enables them to price things appropriately, whether it's so they don't go too high and too low. Well, the city council has decided that that's too much of an advantage for these property owners, and they've basically said you can't do this, and if we catch you doing it, although they don't tell you how they're going to catch you, they're going to fine you £7,500. That's a dollar.
You let your British slip out there.
Yeah, my British came back there. But $7,500 for this, for violating whatever it is they decided is a bad thing to do. And it's a complete constitutional overreach. They're basically becoming some kind of regulatory oversight into something that they really have no authority over at all.
Well, and I guess the thing I don't understand is that I have a friend who's in the rental business, and he said, Lars, landlords don't set the rent. The market sets the rent. And I know there are people who've argued with me endlessly about that, Mark, because I'll tell them the market sets the rent. And they said, what do you mean the landlord decides? I said, if landlord has let's say we knew the perfect value for an apartment was $1,500. A landlord who goes out and says, I'm going to charge $1,700, he's probably not going to get any applicants. If on the other hand, he sets it low, at $1,300. He'll rent it immediately and realize that he just shortchanged himself a couple of $100. But if he rents it at about what that apartment of that size and that number of bedrooms in that neighborhood should rent for, I don't see the harm.
Yeah, and the information that tools like RealPage collate, so this is all publicly available. So you as a property owner can go online and figure this out. It's just that the RealPage app aggregates it for you and it lets you do it a lot faster. I'll give you another scenario where this is really, really gray. Imagine you owned a property in Yakima and a property in Seattle and that you were renting both, and you went on the tool to figure out how much to rent your property in Yakima for, but Seattle's definition could be that you as a property owner just flat out period can't use this tool, and now they can fine you for doing that, even though you may not have even done it for the Seattle side of things. And so this is, it's ridiculous that the council thinks, first of all, how are they even going to enforce this? They can't even afford to clean up their own streets, let alone chase property owners around on how they figured out their rent for their properties.
And Mark, let me understand this. So if a landlord simply sits down, pulls up the internet, looks at a bunch of, because I've looked at them for friends saying, we can probably find you an apartment for, you know, a reasonable price. Where do you want to live? What do you need? And you put in all those criteria and it'll tell you what things are renting for in given neighborhoods. So you can do that and you're allowed to use your gut to say, yeah, my apartment is not far from that one. That one's for rent for about this much. It's about the same size. It's about the same quality in terms of, I don't know, the mod cons, as the Brits like to say. And you say, okay, I'll set the rent there. So if you do it based on a little bit of gut and a little bit of data, it's okay. But if you use something that actually takes a finer tuning tool to the data, then that's forbidden.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. And because of the vague language of the ordinance, it prohibits any software that uses algorithms to recommend rent prices to multiple property owners. What if you had an Excel spreadsheet and you just manually put the stuff in and you put a little macro on it that calculated the average price and did some stuff like that? Is that considered an algorithm? In which case you get fined $7,500, especially if you presented this to anybody else in the area. And so this is the kind of the thin string that they're trying to pull here, just to try to, force the price of rent down even further, because that's where they're going. They don't want the property owners to charge more. They want them to charge less.
Well, if they want them to charge less, how about cutting some of the rules and regs of government that keep people from building new apartments? Because that would actually have a downward pressure on rents, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly how you solve this problem. You go back and you create more housing, which demand and supply will then drive down the cost of rent, or at least keep the rents as flat as possible, because there's more houses on the market right now. That's how you do it. You don't do it through these kind of regulations.
And the thing is, Mark, I've also told people, let's say a landlord has 5 empty units. He needs to rent them fast. He may deliberately underprice them a little bit, saying, you know, if I think I can get $1,400 for this apartment, but I'm going to price them at $1,350, because then I can fill up these 5 units, and every month these 5 units are sitting empty is $7,500 that I'm not getting and never will get. On the other hand, if you're somebody who's got every unit full, they've all been full a long time, and then one comes empty, you might actually deliberately decide to price it a little high, you know, and say, I want, you know, if people who can pay more, you might think, well, I might get a better class of renter. If I have to wait a little while, it's no big deal. So there are landlords who might respond to all kinds of different kinds of economic pressures, either pricing low or pricing high. And all of that gets factored into it as well. That is Mark Harmsworth. He is the director of the Small Business Center at Washington Policy. Mark, thanks very much. And we do hope you run for re-election to something at some point, because you're a good man. I'll get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com.
A reminder,
You are in control.
Our Constitution is a document in which we, the people, tell the government what it is allowed to do.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get to your phone calls and emails on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday in just a moment. But I want to talk about this judge who has temporarily blocked Donald Trump's executive order that would restrict birthright citizenship, which I think he has every right to do. And I'll make the case for you. And by the way, as you know, we always put naysayers to the head of the line. If I get some naysayers on that, they can go ahead and make the best argument possible. And if they're not willing to do that, then I guess their argument isn't worth much. Anyway, welcome to the program. If you want to join in what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And by the way, our X poll every day, brand new poll question out of the news every day today. Are you satisfied with the answers we got from the Trump administration about whether Jeffrey Epstein trafficked children for sex to his friends? My answer to that would be no. We're promised the Epstein client list. We've now got Alan Dershowitz, the emeritus professor from Harvard, who's himself has been accused of being one of the beneficiaries of Jeffrey Epstein's pedophilia. He has always steadfastly denied it. He says he's actually seen the Epstein list, doesn't say he has a copy of it, but he says he has seen the list, and yet the Trump administration says no list exists, no videos exist of Jeffrey Epstein with children. Well, you can draw your own conclusions, but I think it's certainly less than transparent. And that's less than what I would expect from President Trump. I support him as president of the United States. But one of the reasons I support him as president is that he does want to tell people what's actually going on inside their government. If instead we're going to see an administration that hides things, and I get the sense that they're not being forthright about this, they come out late on a Sunday night and announce Epstein killed himself. He was not murdered. Epstein left behind no client list. The FBI has no client list, even though the attorney general herself, Pam Bondi, had said she had the list sitting on her desk. She was asked about it back in February. She said it's sitting on my desk waiting to be released. And now she says the list does not exist. And do I buy that? No, I don't. But before I get to the birthright citizenship and the temporary blocking from a federal judge who I think is out of line, let me go first to Nathan. Hey, Nathan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
It's kind of off subject, but they passed the big, beautiful bill, and I was reading where it had a provision in it to get rid of registering suppressors, but I don't know if it got taken out, and I can't find the info.
I don't think it got taken out. And what it did was it zeroed out the tax. Now, you understand, on suppressors, which other people call silencers, they're not actually silencers. They make guns quieter, but only a bit, only enough to avoid hearing damage and all that. If you think it's the that you see in movies, it ain't that. So suppressors.
No, I understand.
I want the people listening to understand that, because they'll say, well, Donald Trump has legalized suppressors. They've always been legal, but they originally put a fee on it that was designed to be high enough that at the time, almost 100 years ago, that it would have made it almost impossible for the average person to own one. And then, you know, that fee has come forward. You still have to run through a federal background check to get one. You just don't have to fill out all the other, paperwork and pay the fee to the federal government. I believe that's still in the bill. Was that your only question?
Yeah, that was my question. I couldn't find the information, and we were really hoping that was in there,
You know, that is the tragedy of the federal government not actually writing budgets. All they do is continuing resolutions or reconciliation bills that basically continue what's already the budget, and then they advance it on to the next stage. This one, smaller, not smaller overall, but less of an increase than we would have had if they kept on going at the rate they've been going the last several years. So, and I think that Trump is planning to cut further, but he's going to do it through what are called rescission bills, which is like saying pass the budget, and then we're going to go in and start chipping away at it. Plus, we're bringing in a lot of money through tariffs. But, yeah, I believe that part of the bill, the last gun experts we talked to were about a week ago. I believe that was still in the bill when Trump signed it on the 4th of July.
Excellent. Awesome. Yeah, he's a smart man.
Yeah, he is. We aren't going to necessarily get everything out of him in one. But let me go to this. Here's what's happened lately. You have federal judges who've decided they have more authority than the federal than the president of the United States. Now, I've explained before the president of the United States is actually a weak executive position. The president can't spend money on his own. He can't make a law on his own. All of that stuff has to go through Congress. But one of the things he has not only the authority to do, but he's actually got a constitutional responsibility to do, is to enforce the immigration laws of the United States. And one of those issues has to do with birthright citizenship. That is, for decades, America has operated not based on the law. There is no law that says if you are born on American soil, you are an American citizen. There is the 14th Amendment, which was written specifically to deal with the children of freed slaves in America, making it clear that all of them are American citizens. But since then, the popular interpretation of the law has been, well, if you're born on American soil, then you're a citizen. And they've even cited things like the Wong Kim Ark case, which is from, again, about 100 years ago. And what it said was that Wong Kim Ark was born to Chinese nationals on American soil, and he's an American citizen. Big difference from current birthright citizenship for illegal alien parents. Why? Because Wong Kim Ark's parents were legally in the United States. Illegal aliens, as the name implies, are not legally in the United States. So what did the judge do? Well, today, a federal judge did two things that you ought to pay attention to. One, he granted class action status to a lawsuit to protect babies who would be denied birthright citizenship under the Trump rule. But the Trump rule is in keeping with federal law and the Constitution. The second thing he did, though, was he blocked, temporarily blocked, Donald Trump's order that said, if you're born here, but you do not, your parents are not here legally, then you're not an American citizen. That has been temporarily blocked. And once again, even though the U.S. Supreme Court had told the lower courts, stop doing these nationwide injunctions, stick within your own lane, they're not doing that now. So the judge issued a preliminary injunction temporarily blocking Donald Trump's order from going into effect, but he stayed his order for 7 days. That gives the government time to appeal, and I have a feeling that's going to be a good way to go about it. We have never before had an opportunity to actually get a Supreme Court decision at some point about what the 14th Amendment actually says. And I can tell you this, from my look at the Constitution, it does not say just being born on American soil by itself to illegal aliens makes you an American citizen. Keith, you're going to have to say it fast. What's on your mind?
Okay. Question. You've talked for a long time about codifying the fact that business people can't deduct the wages of illegal immigrants on their income taxes.
Yep.
And because the Big Beautiful Bill came out, it wasn't in there. I was just wondering, do you have any more current information on that idea?
No, right now they have not yet made that law. I wish they would. There was a proposal about 15 years ago to do that. That would clean up the illegal alien problem very, very quickly. But so far, no Congress has been willing to pass that. So instead, we have to go about it the hard way. Keith, thanks for the call. You got the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest.
The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. Are men tired of feeling second class? Now, we're not running around whining or crying in our beer, but it does seem kind of emblematic of 2025 that after Donald Trump won the election last November, and remember, it was only not last November, that's not that long ago, the Democrats went out and they spent $20 million to try to figure out how to get to young men in America. And they can't figure it out, but the Republicans, or at least conservative Republicans, seem to have figured it out. I thought we'd talk about that with Edward Bartlett, who's founder of SAVE, which is an organization that focused on fairness and due process on college campuses. Edward, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Lars. And, hey, I wish they would have given some of that $20 million to me. I could have used it. And I could have given the answer in just two or three sentences. It's really not that difficult.
What would you have told the Democrats as your advice? I mean, you wouldn't have hired, I take it you wouldn't have hired Walls, Tampon Tim from Minnesota, to advise you on that, right?
Well, I don't, probably not. After seeing that video of his colleagues put out, I think the advice I would give is, hey, if we believe in gender equality, that concept has to apply equally to men as we've applied it to women over the past 50 years.
And why is that not happening right now? Because that's pure common sense.
It is common sense. It's not happening because feminists have disseminated a whole series of myths, starting with the myth of patriarchy, starting with the myth of the rampant so-called oppression of women, starting with the claim of a gender wage gap, when it's all explained by the fact that men work more hours, work in more dangerous occupations, and so forth. And you could just go through a long laundry list of these myths that have been floated, and they've been kind of accepted and incorporated into the cultural narrative. And I think it's created a sense of shame, a sense of embarrassment for many men, to the point that men have kind of crawled into a little cave to sort of get away from the abuse.
Well, some have, but I mean, I've seen this split where the men you talk to on the Democrat liberal side of things, they try to act as much like women as they possibly can. You know, they're not very demonstrative. They're not, you know, they don't want to exhibit any of that toxic masculinity. And that side of the aisle behaves that way. I've seen the other side of the aisle not respond by amping up their masculinity, but simply saying, I'm not going to do that. And have the Democrats just missed the fact that approach, saying we're going to make, you know, we're going to try to become as androgynous a society as we possibly can, is for the so-called men that are attracted to behaving that way, it doesn't resonate with the public very well.
It doesn't resonate. And yet, let's concede a point that, yes, in there are circumstances where it's appropriate and fine to show your emotions. Of course,
sure,
that's fine. But what happens is when that message of, yeah, show your emotions, is combined with sort of a shaming message that you have been the patriarchal oppressor of women for centuries and centuries, that's where it gets very problematic. And that's where the whole narrative has gone. And so just very recently, June 13th to be exact, President Trump issued a presidential proclamation. I've read hundreds of presidential proclamations. Everyone has been boring except for this one. And if I may, I'd like to just read a couple sentences, because I really think this is a revolutionary statement.
Please do.
So, President Trump wrote, quote, "For far too long, the health, happiness, and well-being of our nation's men have been neglected, contributing to a troubling reality. Men in the United States have a life expectancy 5 years shorter than women." And that's factually true, that of the five-year disparity. But here is the real zinger in continuing in his proclamation, quote, "This neglect has been compounded by a vicious campaign against masculinity." Wow. I think there's a lot of I think we can kind of say that's a revolutionary statement.
Well, it is. And in fact, your take on this is that men have become the new power demographic, and the Democrats, who are out of power, I mean, out of the House, at least by a smidgen, out of the Senate, you know, in a minority, and out of the White House as well, and out in so many states, they've decided we'd like to have that power demographic back, except they can't figure out how to get it, because I don't think they know.
they're digging themselves into a deeper and deeper hole with all, you know, they're actually now saying, hey, we need to become more violent, even to the point of saying, hey, we need to become so aggressive in our positions, like on immigration, that if you, a Democrat, are shot, that's perfectly fine, because when people see blood in the street, they'll rally to our cause. I mean, that is the logic, and that obviously
and yet, Edward, that's the, I mean, being masculine doesn't mean being violent. In fact, you know, for the most masculine types, you don't want to mess with them at all. They don't have to engage in violence, because people say that's a powerful person. I'm not going to go in and get into some kind of physical confrontation with a person. Instead, you got people who are, you know, dressing up in masks and covering themselves up so nobody can identify them, and then going out and committing acts of violence. I mean, if you've got to go out and do some violence, I mean, I would think most people would say, I'm only going to do it when it's absolutely necessary. And if it's necessary, I don't have to wear a mask because I'm doing what's right.
Well, one of the biggest myths that's been foisted upon the American public over the last 20, 30 years is the issue of domestic violence. So when you hear those words, domestic violence, most people think of they picture a beefy man with a clenched fist with his wife or girlfriend huddling in the corner, shaking in fear. Well, here's the truth of domestic violence. According to the Centers for Disease Control, women are more likely to be perpetrators of domestic violence than men.
Wow.
I can give you the exact numbers. Each year there's 6.5 million male victims of domestic violence, compared with 5.6 female victims of physical domestic violence. That comes from the CDC. It's good data. I've looked at it. But again, that's totally different from the narrative.
It is. And yet, Edward, I remember decades ago, I think Seattle was one of the first cities in America to change a law and say, if the police show up at a domestic violence, whoever's shedding blood, the other person gets arrested. You know, it seemed pretty common sense and easy to, you know, dial in. If the cops show up, one person is bleeding, you arrest the other person for doing the violence. And they were shocked, I think, when 40% of the people they arrested were women. And they said, wow, yeah. Wow, that was not what we expected. Because as you said, the dominant paradigm was, when we show up, it'll be 99% men and occasionally a woman will have done it. No, it's 40% to 60%. Still a bit of a numerical number on the male side, but not a small number on the female side. That's Edward Bartlett. He's founder of SAVE, which is an organization focused on fairness and due process on college campuses. Edward, thank you very much for the call. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I'm glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. No good naysayers yet today, but maybe everybody's afraid to argue for the craziness on the left. 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. When it comes to...
The 40th President of the United States always knew where to put the blame.
You have blamed mistakes of the past, and you blame the Congress. Does any of the blame belong to you?
Yes, because for many years I was a Democrat.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. This segment of the show is brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. Patricia is on the line. Hey, Patricia, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
In regards to the DEI, thank you. In regards to the DEI, politically correct, we are such a microwave community society that we are looking at the instant gratification. So hiring people who are not qualified to do the job in the long term, people who are qualified to do the job are getting burnt out doing their job because they have to take up the slack for the placeholder in whatever position they're in. Yep. And what it's causing is a lot of mental health issues. It's causing people to retire early. It's just a triple effect. And I'm on the edge of the baby boomers, and so I'm seeing it, and it's like I'm sick of it.
Well, let me ask you this too, Patricia, because I think this is the worst dirty joke on people of color and people who legitimately might say, gosh, I would benefit from DEI. Can you imagine what happens in any workplace or any situation where you say, we're going to subscribe to DEI? For all the people who know they got into the job, who hear this new policy, and they're you know that you got your job because you're very competent in it, and you're really good at it. And then the company says, we're going to go DEI. When that first person comes in who you know is, say, that must be a DEI hire, it works against that person because you assume that person didn't get hired because they know what they're doing. They got hired because they're black, because they're brown, because they're gay, because they're trans, because they use a pronoun and they identify as non-binary. And even if the person is competent, if everybody in the room thinks they're there because of, you know, something other than competence, isn't that going to hurt that person?
Absolutely it is, because your perception is your reality and my perception is my reality. And they're already walking into, a firing squad, quite frankly. And I don't mean to offend anybody, but that's exactly what they're doing. They're setting them up for failure. And it's not fair to the employee. It's not fair to the rest of the people. It just needs to be a level playing field, and let's hire people who are qualified to do the job. They're going to be the ones taking our places as we retire. And it just, yeah, I mean, I'm doing it now where I wonder how people got their job and, more importantly, how they keep their job. It's like, excuse me? And their pay grade's a lot higher than mine. But that's all I had to say. But
Patricia, think about this, Patricia. Do you remember when Joe Biden said he would pick his running mate because he was going to pick somebody who was black and female? And you say, okay, how'd that work out? She turned, do you know... I don't know if you saw this, but I don't think I mentioned it this week, but there's a popular podcast. I'm trying to remember. It's Subway Takes. That's what it's called. I'd never seen it before, but apparently it's got a big audience. And they did an interview with Kamala Harris before the election. Okay. Now think about this. So this is a guy who does this podcast, and he's got a lot of people who watch it. Okay. Good for him. He did an interview with Kamala Harris before the election, right before the election, you know, apparently a couple weeks before the election. And so you'd anticipate, boy, everybody's going to be watching my podcast. He said at the end of the interview, at the end, you know, within a day or so of the interview, because they didn't do it live like I do my show, he said he and his producers and Kamala Harris and her handlers agreed mutually that it should never air. And they said because she sounded so wigged out or crazy or, you know, she didn't make sense. And this wasn't him saying, oh, she sounds like an idiot, I'm not going to air that. Apparently, both he and the Kamala Harris campaign said, please don't air that. And he said, I'm not going to air it because we all agree that she looks completely foolish in this interview. And he has said since then, because he's talked about the fact apparently it has never seen the light of day. Apparently it never will see the light of day. It will be locked up forever. But he said he was honestly glad they didn't air it, because he was convinced that if they aired the interview and now we know that Kamala Harris lost, that he would take some of the blame for her loss. Because they said, if only you hadn't aired that crazy interview with her in which she looked. Now, imagine that. You hire a woman based on DEI. I'm going to hire a black woman. Doesn't matter whether she's competent or not, or popular or not, or makes sense or not. I'm going to hire her because she's black and a woman. And then she turns out to be so crazy that even after 4 years on the job, she sits down to do an interview before a major election. And even she agrees, no. No, we should not let people see that. Patricia, thanks. Let's go to Kim. Oh, shoot. I was going to work Kim in before the end of the hour, because we are very close to the break, and I always try to warn people when we're close to the break. Don't forget, Every single week, we celebrate your First Amendment freedoms, which are much more secure these days because Donald Trump is president and he's getting rid of a lot of the crazy stuff that Biden and Harris had wanted to impose on Americans. So enjoy your First Amendment freedoms. We celebrate First Amendment Fridays every single week. We have for more than a quarter of a century. I'll be glad to welcome you on First Amendment Friday. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. The Lars